Blog Talk Radio.
Don't mind if you got something nice to say about me. I enjoy an accolade like the rest. You could take my picture and hang it in.
Good morning and welcome to Solutions Live Business Edition. I'm your host, Chickie Fitzgerald, coming to you from Tampa, Florida. Solutions Live provides practical advice from authors and experts on a wide range of topics for professionals to help you leave your legacy. Today we have an amazing lineup to talk about innovation, leadership, growth, and investment insights.
Well, good morning. It is Tuesday, March 24th, and we are coming to you from sunny Tampa, Florida. It is an absolutely glorious day, and my co-host Chris Bradshaw is in Dallas. What's the weather like there, Chris?
We are waiting for a thunderstorm. Maybe we get hail. It's going to be one of those beautiful Texas thunderstorms coming this way, so I keep waiting. Put the dogs out, brought them back in, going, hurry up, get back in before you get soaked. But it hasn't shown up yet, so we'll see.
Well, I took my first walk in 10 months today in preparation for our fitness challenge, which will begin a week from Thursday with Phil and Amy on our real-life renovations, and I am hoping to be the poster child for that show. So I was getting back in the swing of things.
Oh, my, congratulations.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, the last time I went out for a walk was the day that when I was coming back in through the gate, I was greeted by a snake on the bush and the FedEx truck coming in behind me. And I went, you know, to the right away from the snake, to the left away from the FedEx truck, and fractured my ankle. And so as I was coming back from my walk today, I was just a little bit antsy. And the funny thing is just as I was walking through the gate, I heard this rumbling, and I looked behind me, and it was the FedEx truck. But there was no snake. Thank God.
Well, there you go. Okay, good step one.
There you
one.
Go. But I overcame it, and I'm going to do it again tomorrow. So this morning we have on our 10 a.m. show, which we're going to get to in just a second, Sarah Miller Caldicott, and she is just a fascinating woman introduced by my dear friend Lana, who actually also introduced us to our 11 a.m. guest. So Lana is kind of our secret guest today. And at 10:30, we have got a woman named Jane Goldner, and she is the author of a book called Driven to Success, a 10-point checkup for achieving high performance in business. And Jane is going to be talking to us about leadership. At 11 a.m., we're going to be talking about growth with Edward Cates, and I call this segment The Nuance of Growth. Edward is actually the CEO of a company in Atlanta called Nuance Marketing, and I thought, what a fun company name. You can do so much with it, and he can write a whole series of books. So, and then at 11:30, actually, we started a few weeks ago. We replaced our investment segment with a segment about corporate escape artists. And today's corporate escape artist is Shannon McCaffrey. And I will wait until 11:30 and let my co-host Pamela Skillings give us an intro to Shannon. But without further ado, I want to get Sarah on the air. Hang on just one second here. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
So how are things in Dearborn, Michigan?
Well, we have a sunny day here, but it is cold again. We thought that spring had arrived with those 40 and 50-degree temperatures, but we're back down in the 20s today, so
well,
a little chilly.
That's the thing about being up north. That's why they call it up north.
It's true.
And it's one of the reasons why I decided to spend the rest of my days south of the Mason-Dixon line, because I grew up in Wisconsin and had my fill of spring days with snow.
Well, I'm from Wisconsin also, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, we didn't discover that about each other.
I did live in Florida, like you, for many years, and just loved that time, because the tropics are out of this world. It really is like living in paradise.
Definitely. Well, Sarah, I want to just dive right in, because I am just so excited about having you on the show. And, you know, first I'd like just to get a little background. You know, in the intro, that I did for you on the promotion for the show, I did talk about your relationship to Edison, who you've written about in your book. But you have a number of inventors in your family.
Yeah, how about that? kind of an unusual heritage.
Yeah, just give us the thumbnail, because the whole point of our show is really talking about how to leave a legacy. But, you know, quite often we have on people like you who actually are living a legacy. So tell us about that.
Sure. Well, my great-great-grandfather, and that goes back about five generations, was an inventor. He invented agricultural equipment. His name was Lewis Miller. He had 92 patents and 11 children. So he was
wow.
a very busy guy. But
was his wife.
Yeah, right. Very busy life. And he focused on ways for farming to be more efficient. So most of his inventions were ways of eliminating labor, steps that laborers had to take to come into the field and do certain things. So, for example, one of his inventions allowed grain that had been cut in the field to be automatically bound up into a sheaf as the farmer was cutting the grain. So that was a very important labor-saving device and became very profitable and popular. And he also invented an arm, a mechanical arm, some years later, for the farmer to actually reach down and pick up the bound sheaf of grain and put it in the cart behind him. So those modifications ultimately led to the combine harvester, which we see in the fields now, those big, huge machines that, you know, go through and in one pass do everything.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting that back in the 1850s, in 1860s and 70s, these things were happening, but just in a very different way on a different scale. So that was my great-great-grandfather's generation. One of his children, Mina, married Thomas Edison. I mentioned the 11 children. She was child number 7, and her older brother, child number 5, was my great-grandfather. So that's how I am a great-grandniece of Thomas Edison. And, of course, Edison had an extraordinary number of inventions, over 1,000 patents, and developed 6 industries over the course of his lifetime in about a 40-year span. So a very amazing accomplishment for anyone. My grandfather was an inventor at a company called Pittsburgh Plate Glass, or PPG, which still exists today. He was a chemist, and he invented shatterproof glass. So it was called Herculite. That was the brand name, if you will. And it was first introduced into the windshields of Chrysler automobiles. So that's where it first showed, and then later was put into airports and revolving doors, office buildings. So all of us have benefited from the safety features of shatterproof glass. So those are some of the inventors in my family.
Wow, wow. So tell us what got you to the place where you wanted to write a book. Because when you and I spoke, you talked about how there were so many books actually written about Thomas Edison.
Yes.
But most of them were historical in nature,
right,
and not really looking at it from the business perspective.
That's right. Over 70 books have been written about Thomas Edison. Some were written during his lifetime. He was born in 1847, died in 1931 at the age of 84. And so in the last 20, 30 years of Edison's life, people did write about him. But since that time, we have not really heard much from business people about Edison's accomplishments. And in fact, the book that I wrote is really the first book to look at Edison's process, his innovation methods. The historian is more interested in looking at what Edison did, and I was actually wanting to know how he did it. So I think the business perspective is a way to have us look at what can we apply from Edison's unique methods today, because a lot of these are timeless. So this is really why Innovate Like Edison is a more unique look at what Edison accomplished, because it shows us how he was so successful.
That's a wonderful story. This is Chris. Good morning.
Hi, Chris. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
I'm so happy that you chose to do that. And it must have been a fascinating process getting into that, because you could read all these other books and put him in historical context of why that was the challenge he chose to pick up or whatever. But how did you go about that process? So you came up with a number of steps.
Yes.
That the way you kind of filtered it down for yourself?
Well, what was happening as I started doing my research, this was back in 2004, I started seeing patterns in what Edison was doing. And as someone who has spent about 15 years developing products and launching brands both in the U.S. and outside the U.S., I was very familiar with this process of starting with an idea and then going all the way out to implementing the idea. And that's what Edison was, of course, doing for so much of his career. So these steps that you're talking about, I started seeing patterns, and I called them competencies, the five competencies of innovation. And within each of these competencies, there are sort of mini building blocks, so that by mastering the building blocks, we then create a capability to do something bigger and something more powerful. The competencies focus on things like developing new solutions, coming up with robust ideas, putting teams together in a powerful way that helps them work more effectively, connecting ideas to markets, and also creating a workplace culture that is conducive to innovation. That's one of the biggest challenges I think we face today, is how do we make our work environment streamlined and focused on the innovation process. So that's sort of a highlight of what those five competencies talk about.
So your competencies, if applied by the corporation, are really kind of creating an infrastructure almost that supports innovation.
Yes, that's a really great way to think about it. You know, having infrastructure in place is so critical for any of us to accomplish what we want to do, whether it's financial in nature, whether it relates to manufacturing, whether it relates to a service development. Having infrastructure that supports your goals and your vision is critical.
So a lot of companies, one might think of 3M, for example, and we think that they've created that kind of environment, and then you look at other companies, and it's more like there's a skunk works or a little team who's authorized to kind of be creative in a sense.
Right.
And people in what you might consider the maintenance side of the organization instead are feeling like, well, we just have to kind of keep this old stuff going and don't think of it. Is that a good way of thinking about companies who have and haven't done it? Or could you share some... I don't know,
sure.
Typical mistakes.
Well, actually, 3M has done a lot of work trying to understand its own culture and how that culture is innovative or is not innovative.
So what did they accidentally do?
Well, you know, it really wasn't accidental. They
okay.
tried to study it and use some methods and techniques to do that. There are some good ways of looking at companies no matter what industry you might be in. And it has to do with the percentage of your employees who have various qualities. The first thing to look for is whether an individual is more of an adapter or an innovator. The adapter is a person who is interested in taking something that already exists and making it better. So to your point about, hey, we've got this stuff that exists, you know, we've got to keep it going, we've got to keep it profitable, those are the kinds of questions that often the adapter is very strong at solving. The innovator is a person who typically wants to make something new, make something that doesn't exist yet. This is probably what we associate more with innovation, quote-unquote, right, that newness.
Right.
But those individuals need to be put within that infrastructure we were just talking about. It is true that sometimes it feels like there's these random people and they're randomly working on these new things. So it's the job of the innovator to try to communicate what he or she is working on in a way that can connect and, you know, be supported by the rest of the organization. Now, you used the word skunk works just a moment ago, and it is true that 3M has some groups that are very much on the leading edge, right? Those innovators who are out there making something new, developing a new technology that, boy, they don't even know quite what to do with it yet, right?
Right.
So
it doesn't have a business purpose yet.
Yeah, it may or may not, and it may develop a business purpose after it's been invented, if you will, or perfected. So this is why it's important, especially in companies that are technically oriented or do have a technology function, that you have those kind of blue sky projects that are happening in some area of the company, because often that's where the key new insights show up. So even if the actual initiative that someone's working on may not be business have a business result, something that flows from it can. So this is what 3M has realized. So they allow people out there in that innovation portion of their business to kind of work without a lot of parameters like, okay, you've got to deliver, you know, $300 million in revenue in 3 years. So they allow some of this to just evolve and flow forward. What's critical is that the adapters and the innovators, whom I was just talking about, also can connect to other people in the organization, because not everybody is primarily an adapter or an innovator. Some people are really good implementers, for example. They can go and make something happen. They could be salespeople. They could be in finance. There are people who are clarifiers. That's another role that's very important. Clarifying through language, clarifying through maybe putting a business plan together, for example. Clarifying through what are the resources that you need and how can I help you bring those resources into the infrastructure. So there are multiple roles, and I'm not even really going through all of them, but this just gives you a flavor for the importance of knowing kind of how you are wired, if
right.
you are an adapter, if you are a clarifier, and so on, because this helps reduce conflict. That's one of the classic mistakes that companies make, is that they have people working in a function, if you will, that goes against their own tendencies or goes against their own wiring. So that can be a challenge.
That's very interesting. I need to take just a quick break here to acknowledge our new sponsor for Solutions Live. And actually, this is a very interesting one, Sarah. You might want to check these folks out. It's a group called Guru Nation, GURUNATION.com, Guru Nation. And it really is the ultimate knowledge network for professionals who want to learn more and stand out and lead effectively. And I would also, add to innovate. And it is a professional community that is designed to ignite thinking and provide invaluable skill building and create access to hundreds of seasoned industry experts outside of your organization who are willing to share their knowledge and open important doors. And, you know, I think as we look at innovation, I mean, you've just spent some time talking about culture, and I think you've already talked about the whole issue of how conflicts can come up in an organization if people don't recognize where they fit in each
yes.
of those categories. So can you talk to us a little bit about how an organization can manage those conflicts?
Sure. Well, the leadership body of the organization is critical in setting the tone for how conflict is going to be resolved and also how resources are going to be brought forward. This is one of the most important things that a leadership body can do. In many instances, leaders get where they are through being adapters, through looking at best practices, quote unquote. And having a best practices approach tends to be more of a show me how it's done approach, as opposed to I'm going to go out and make the changes myself approach. So the leadership of an organization tends to be less forward-looking and less mobile than other parts of the company. So if the leadership team can realize this and say, okay, our role is going to be to facilitate. our role is going to be to look at these projects and fund them and help keep things moving, because we are going to be the centerpiece. We are going to be the point around which everything else revolves. So helping to reduce conflict can come when the leadership team is offering resources, access, and time. When everything has to flow up to one central point all the time, you run into conflicts and bottlenecks because you just can't get enough meetings. You just can't get on people's calendars. So bringing decision-making authority out into the project teams themselves is another key thing that the leadership team or leadership body can do. That way, you don't have this kind of command and control process that always has to rule every single decision. This is what Edison did. He allowed the teams that he brought together more autonomy in making decisions and moving forward, and when they'd get to a critical point, then he would give them his time, and he would help them troubleshoot. So that is a way that organizations can reduce conflict by allowing the teams a little bit more autonomy and ensuring that they have diverse groups of people brought together, so you've got skill sets on each team that help the team continue to move forward. Apple does this extremely well. Google does this extremely well. And again, this is a model that we can look to Edison for more guidance on.
You know, this is interesting because I think we think of Edison as a lone wolf.
Right. And I think that's a classic myth of American invention.
Yes.
You know, we look back historically over decades and decades and decades, and we do have this notion of, you know, an individual or, say, two guys laboring together in the garage or laboring
right.
in their laboratory in isolation. And nothing could be further from the truth. Edison
well, you
always
write 1,000 patents.
Yes,
first
right.
of all.
Well, and he established over 150 companies. He had thousands of employees. Many of them were in manufacturing operations making his inventions. So he had light bulb factories. He had wiring facilities. He had groups that were making generators and dynamos and, of course, the phonograph, which he invented in 1877. He invented the movies in 1893. So he had all of these companies making his products. So this is where we can also see this notion of the diversity of skill sets that's required to keep an innovation or innovation-driven company moving forward. So it isn't all just about, hey, what can I do on my own? It's how can I take my ideas and connect them in to the network of my company and, you know, make the greatest impact.
That's absolutely really fascinating, and the fact that he wasn't alone. He was, if you will, simply that generation's version of the corporations that we're currently trying to deal with and live in now. And so if you were to look at all of these things, how do you go about putting this together, and where do companies usually make the most mistakes?
Well, I think companies make the most mistakes in, number one, creating teams of people that don't have all the skill sets that they need to be successful. I was talking about those mindsets earlier, you know, the adapter, the innovator, the clarifier,
right.
and so on. That's one of the classic mistakes, is that you may have a lot of people who are either focusing on adaptation put together so that the risk orientation is lower. When the company really wants something that's breakthrough.
Right.
So until you find those individuals who are more willing to leap forward, and the organization needs to be willing to support those folks, that's when the breakthroughs will happen. We could look at the Razr phone at Motorola, which was developed several years ago, as a great example of a company that actually formed a specific team with diverse skill sets. It was a small team at first, roughly 5 to 8 people. It expanded to roughly 15 people at one point. But ultimately, it wasn't that big. It wasn't 30 people, 50 people, 100 people. It was a small group of people who had the right mix of talents to develop a completely new phone and look at that entire cell phone market differently. So one of the classic mistakes is putting the wrong skill sets together.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I was just, if you're one of those people, right, we're the individuals listening in, and, you know, maybe there's a few of the people here who are leadership people.
Yes.
So how do we figure out which of those people we are? I mean, your book is more about how the corporation needs to create the steps of infrastructure, right?
Well, there is actually a little mini quiz in the book, in the back. There are 100 questions that you can go through and take this little test, if you will, and see where you come out. See where you fall on each of the 5 competencies. So it will show you if you have more of a solution orientation, how you are in terms of your team skills, how you like to connect your ideas to value creation structures. It can be very telling in where you're strong and where you might have opportunity areas. One other way that you can determine your own capabilities is to see who you hang out with. You know, see whom you would consider to be like-minded individuals to yourself. Are they ideators? Are they developers? Are they implementers? Are they innovators? So this is where sort of social networking, if you will, comes into play. Who do I most like to connect with? You can look at that pool of people as a way to kind of reflect your own qualities. So that's another way to gain some insight. Birds of a feather flock together, that old saying.
Right. But,
that
Sarah,
can help us look at that.
It occurs to me, though, that might be one of the things that holds people back, because to get to true innovation, it sounds like you need a balance of some of
these
things. So if you're an innovator that hangs out with a whole bunch of other innovators and there's nobody around who can implement and clarify, you may never be able to get out of that cycle of kind of the dream cycle that is a part of that. Well, in the last couple of minutes, and I knew that this half hour was going to go by way too fast, so we're going to have to find a way to have you back on and to dig into this a little bit deeper. But out of those 5 competencies of innovation, do you have one that stands out as the most important? And then when you're finished with that, I'd like for you to quickly tell people how to get a hold of your book and how to get a hold of you.
Sure. I would have to say that of the 5 competencies, the first one is probably the most important. That's the solution-centered mindset. This is the place where an individual establishes their relationship with the future, because solutions in the world of innovation lie in the future. They don't lie typically with tomorrow. They lie with a year from now, 18 months, 2 years, or 3 years. Now, of course, we work toward the solutions, and we sometimes only have 90 days to do things. But the important thing for the innovator is to develop a relationship with the future and start to create an ability to think in nonlinear ways, not always in terms of linear time. This is what Edison developed as a skill set. This is where his experimentation was so critical. As people in the modern world, we need to be able to hold multiple options in our minds at the same time and not always feel driven to pick one immediately. This is what Edison was very skilled at doing, because he allowed solutions to emerge rather than forcing the solutions. So by using the other competencies, we start to enhance this capability, but the solution-centered mindset is really the place to begin that exercise. So no matter if you're an adapter, a clarifier, and so on, it's a very important skill set to have.
Well, that's great, Sarah. And your company is called Power Patterns.
That's right.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's all right.
And just let them know where they can reach you and, again, the name of your book.
Sure. I can be reached on my website, which is powerpatterns.com, powerpatterns.com, and it's also the same website as my name, sarahcaldicott.com, sarahcaldicott.com. Those refer to the same page. My book is called Innovate Like Edison, The Five-Step System for Breakthrough Business Success. And the book is available on Amazon. It's available at Borders, at Barnes & Noble, and all kinds of independent booksellers across the country. So you can really get it any way that you most prefer.
Great. Yes, we also have a link to it on both the blogtalkradio.com site and also solutionslive.blogspot.com.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. And clearly we've got a lot more to talk to you about, so we will definitely have to circle back and maybe when your award is a little bit more gelled, we will get together and talk about that.
That sounds terrific. Well, thank
okay.
you. I'd love to speak with you again anytime.
That'd
thank you very
great.
Much.
Have a terrific day, Sarah.
Okay. Thanks to both of you.
Okay. Great.
Bye.
Well, that was absolutely fascinating, and as I said, I think we probably could have gone an hour easily on that topic. I want to just thank again our new sponsor, Guru Nation. GuruNation.com offers its content 24/7, plus the opportunity to talk live with over 20 industry leaders every month. The Guru Nation provides exciting professional development, leadership workshops, executive coaching, public presentation training, and a monthly open line career coaching session. And really the best part of this is that individual membership in the Guru Nation is free. So I just signed up this weekend and am just really excited about what they're up to. Well, now it's time to shift our focus, although in many ways what we heard from Sarah already touched on many of the topics that our next guest is going to speak about. In talking about leadership and how to really get to success. Our next guest is Jane Goldner, and actually I should call her Dr. Jane Goldner. She is a PhD and the author of Driven to Success, a 10-point checkup for achieving high performance in business. And this book is really fascinating, and I love the layout of the book. It really gives a very, very practical step-by-step guide that is designed to help business leaders propel their organizations to the next level of high performance. Let me get Jane on the air. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Vicki. How are you?
And do I need to call you Dr. Goldner? I know you worked really, really hard on getting that PhD.
Jane is fine.
Okay, perfect.
And I have to tell you, we already have several tie-ins. I have recently been invited to become a guru on Guru Nation.
Oh, cool.
So that's our first tie-in. And our second tie-in is I am on the speaker series with Sarah's co-author, Michael Gelb, who spoke last week on Innovate Like Edison at the Georgia Tech Leadership Forum.
Oh, that is so cool. You know, I mean, throughout my life, I spend my time connecting the dots between people who know each other. And this show has been such an amazing example of that. Last week on our innovation segment, we had a guy named Dr. David Pensick on, and he was talking about this young guy who had created these stickers that go in shoes for kids, and he created it when he was 6 years old. And Chris and I had just interviewed him the previous week on the show, Chris Barrett. So it's a very, very small community.
It is, and everybody seems to be so connected in one way or another, and which
definitely
is a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, the woman who is the co-creator of the Guru Nation, Amy Dorn Copeland, actually was the co-author with my first guest on this show when we launched about 2 months ago, Nancy Widman, who is the former CEO of CBS Radio. So I have just been having a grand time getting to know all these amazing women. Start out talking about your book. One of my favorite questions of authors is what actually got you to the point where writing that particular book was really what you absolutely had to do, that you just couldn't continue until you got those words down on paper?
I'd have to say that after
25 years of working with all sizes and types of companies and typically recommending resources for them, given whatever project we were doing, there was one type of book that was missing. Leadership happens on three levels. Level one is leading yourself. Level two is leading others. Lots of books out there on those topics. But the one that was missing to me was the level three leadership, and that was how does a leader really lead a company, all the systems, all the processes, all the people, and connect all the dots? So that's what inspired me to take my years of experience and what I was doing with clients and put it in a very practical toolkit that leaders can use to run a company.
Well, and I love, again, as I was giving your introduction, the simplicity of how you have laid this book out. And I know that the content isn't simple, but you have laid it out in such a way that I think CEOs or people who would like to run their own companies, there isn't anyone I can think of who couldn't pick this up and actually use it as a checklist for how to make sure that they've got the right people on board, you know, that they're doing the right things, you know, whether they've got certain things in place and or whether they're actually satisfied with how the outcome is. And I just think that methodology that you've used to put the book together is just terrific.
Thank you. And that was exactly my vision for the book. I wanted to make my hallmark in consulting is making the complex simple. At least that's what my clients tell me. And so that's what I tried to do in the book, is to take some very complex pieces of running an organization and really distill it down to here are the basics you need to know. Now that you know them, what are the actions you can take to make it happen in your company? And here are some success stories from clients and interviewees, how they used those particular actions or pieces to better run their company. And it just flowed into a very simple layout because I believe that consultants are valuable and you should use them at trigger points. But like I tell my clients, I want to visit with you and help you get better, but I don't want to live with you. So I will help you build internal capacity. And I think that was probably the bottom line of my book, was to help a leader build internal capacity so they're not so dependent on hiring consultants all the time.
And that's a great vision for both your practice and the book. It's often very difficult to kind of try to get yourself weaned from someone who's become dependent on you and say, no, this is your business, right?
Well, and particularly in this economy, there's not the kind of money there used to be. You know, and my fellow consultants don't like my message, but...
Well, Chris and I are both consultants by trade, and Chris has just come out of working for one of, and again, I never know whether they're called the big four, big three, you know, big two and a half.
It changes regularly.
You know, I've been an independent consultant for 13 years, and Chris has actually worked for me, you know, on a number of occasions on very, very large projects. But we both actually subscribe to your position that, you know, we actually do want to teach people how to fish. We don't want to be out there feeding them for the next 10 years.
Right, and there's certainly enough companies that need consulting help where we can help build internal capacity and move on and always be on call. And, I mean, I've had a client for 12 years. Am I with them all the time every day? No, I've set them up so they've got internal capacity. But then when they run into a problem that they can't fix or something new they want to do and want to jumpstart, they call.
Perfect. Right. So is there anything unique right now in this economy that you found about your 10, you know, your checkpoints? Anything special right now?
Well, it's interesting. When I started writing the book, we weren't quite in this economic crisis. And then the more I talked about the book, the more it got these positive responses for this is really valuable in this economy.
Huh.
Because what it does is it forces leaders to get laser focused on their business. And the most critical checkpoint of the 10 is the core, and that's the mission, vision, and values. The mission, of course, is the reason you're in business, what wouldn't get done if you weren't. And that's where you really get your laser focus. When leaders get stressed, they tend to throw everything against the wall to see what sticks, and that's exactly the wrong strategy in today's economy. They need to get laser focused on what the company does well and create more of a ready, aim, fire approach. So the book helps them really get clear. And then also, the second point about the core is the vision, and that's where you're taking the company. Again, in crisis, leaders tend to focus on the immediate road ahead, which is very appropriate, but they forget that there's a next curve coming. You know, when is the economy going to turn around, and how do we position ourselves to take advantage of that? And the last of the core are the values. And when people get stressed, they tend to question things, whether they should do them when they're not directly in sync with their values, and it's just that time when you need to hold fast to your values and make those business decisions based on the few values that if your back are against the wall, you wouldn't compromise. And for a lot of leaders, their backs are against the wall right now, and they can't forget their values, because long term it will hurt them more than it'll help them in making short term decisions.
And that's always risky, and it's always a temptation, isn't it? And a temptation probably even more so in our current times. So could you share with us some of the legacies, leadership legacies, of course, that you've learned over your many years of consulting, and maybe as well some of the kind of, what do I want to call them, the people who never will learn, or the ones that you walk away sadly shaking your head?
And I have to tell you that I do fire clients.
Exactly. I didn't want to quite put it that way.
I do. That's just plain and simple. I get to a point
where you're like, you're paying me, and this is ridiculous because exactly. I'm having no success, and neither are you, and I don't want to live my day this way, right?
Exactly. It is. You know what, you're wasting your money and my time. This is not working, and let me tell you why it's not working. So I'll start in the reverse order of your question.
Yeah.
The first reason is that the leader hires a consultant for the consultant to come in and do it, whatever it is.
Ah, okay, yes, we all know that.
Come make my company better.
Right.
And they never take ownership, so when the consultant leaves, nothing happens.
Yeah, nothing's different.
And when the consultant comes back, everybody shapes up.
Right.
And so it's very consultant-dependent. So that's not a relationship that works. It's not a good use of the company's money, the consultant's time, and it also breaks down credibility for the leader should there be a next time that the leader wants to do some major transformation effort or some initiative. You know, the people roll their eyes and they say, here it comes again.
Right. We're going to pay some consultant again
And we're going to be consultant dependent.
Right.
So that's that. If you're not willing to take ownership and be out there as a leader learning how to build internal capacity, you shouldn't start it. So I think that's one of the biggest leadership legacies to learn. On the flip side, every leader should know that whether they choose to or not, they're going to leave a legacy in their company. and it's what people say about you after you leave. So my advice is think deeply about what you want your legacy to be and become proactive and very focused about doing those things that are going to help you leave that legacy. So many leaders go through their days and weeks and months and focus on, you know, even the near term, and they don't think about long term, how do I want to leave this business better? Part of a big piece of a leader's legacy is to help a business be sustainable to live after the leader leaves? So what do you need to do as a leader to enable that to happen?
So do you think that that many of the corporations in the news lately had leadership who thought that way?
In general, I would say absolutely not. And I think it's a vicious cycle. I think that we, the stockholders, you know, have been forcing leaders into short-term thinking.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's how they've been compensated. So they're worried about their compensation in this quarter. Mm-hmm. And you know, historically, at least recently, if you look at just the near past, CEOs are turning over very quickly. And
yes,
if you look further back, you'd see that CEOs stayed a whole lot longer. So their focus has been on what can I make happen now before I'm not here anymore.
Before I'm let go, what are the, right, and there's so many books now that talk about how to make dramatic decisions in your first 100 days or things like that so that you can prove you were the right choice.
And I think that, I don't know if a lot of people remember the candy called Now and Later.
Yes.
All right. Well, actually, it's still around. I looked on the Internet. I tend to think of leadership that way. If you're going to be an effective leader, you have to lead in the now with a mindset for the later. And it's the same analogy about if you're driving a car, you're looking at the immediate road ahead, but you better anticipate the next curve.
Right,
so that you're
right,
ready to make the right maneuvers.
And well, I think the interesting thing is that if you can also couple that with an understanding that it is possible to drive, you know, from the East Coast all the way to the West Coast to do it only at night where you only have limited vision in front of you and you still can get there, that a lot of people actually are operating blindly in their leadership style, just hoping that nothing is going to come up that is going to thwart their ability to get to where they're going. Or perhaps, you know, worse yet, they don't really even know where they're going. They just know where the company has always been. And this is why I'm pushing so hard for people to really think about their legacy.
Yeah.
And what are people going to say about you 50 years from now? Or will they ever even know that you existed? And, you know, clearly we just heard from Sarah talking about, you know, the legacy of invention in her family. And I don't think that that's any accident that occurs, but that children watch what their parents do and get a flavor for whether that works or not. And, you know, I would venture to say that the children of some of these leaders who, many of whom may actually end up in jail, you know, before this is all over, are going to sit back and really think twice about going into corporate life. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your consulting practice, but I want to just stop again and mention the Guru Nation, because I think that what Amy and her partner are trying to do in building up this free service for, you know, accessing people who have the knowledge and who have the experience to answer questions that you have, and where, you know, yahoo.com and google.com, you know, while you can dig through and eventually find what you're looking for, it's a lot of work. And, you know, what they're trying to do is to distill down, you know, your ability to get to the people who can actually help you get to the next place. And again, igniting thinking and providing, you know, skills and creating access to seasoned industry experts. But Jane, I want to talk a little bit about your consulting clientele, because clearly in your bio you talk about the large companies such as Georgia-Pacific and Coca-Cola and the Georgia Department of Defense and National Guard. What about entrepreneurs? Do you work with smaller entrepreneurial firms?
Yes, in fact, I do. And one of them is always mentioned in my bio, and it was an environmental engineering firm that started out as a mom and pop with one employee. And they were actually another reason why I wrote this book, because many entrepreneurs go into a company and they're great at their technical expertise. But as they grow, what they're missing is you have to work on the business, not only in the business.
Right.
And they forget that at some point you have to create processes and systems so that as you grow the business, you don't have to micromanage everything, that you know as you hire people, there are guidelines, there's a foundation for them to follow. So it's really critical, well, actually in today's time, it's very critical to walk that fine line between allowing bright people the independence to do their best work, but putting some structure in place so that you can run as a company. So yes, I do work with smaller companies and mid-sized companies, and it's really all the same work. It just depends upon where they are in their development, where they are in their sophistication. And sometimes it's very energizing to work with companies that don't yet have that structure in place because there's no historical baggage to overcome to get the right things in place. But, you know, regardless of the size of the company, I think particularly in this economy, a business really needs to get laser-focused on what they do well, and that would be my message no matter what size company you have. I also think they need to really build relationships with their customers. I don't know about you, but I don't know many leaders that are going out and saying to their customers, how are you doing in this economy and how can we help you?
Right.
Good point.
We're all suffering, but even if you can't help them in ways they would like, it's asking the questions that build that relationship.
So much fear, though, in leadership and going out and asking a question like that, because they all assume that the answer is going to be reduce your prices.
Right, right.
As opposed to actually saying, okay, well, you know, that's something I can look at, but truly, what else is there? Let's think about this.
Right. How can we work better together? Because, you know, there's
right.
going to be the next curve with the economy getting better. And, of course, the customers are going to migrate to the businesses that treated them well during the downturn and
Absolutely.
Didn't try and take advantage. And the third thing that I would tell a business of any size is communicate to your employees. Employees right now are walking on eggshells. They're wondering if they're going to get the next pink slip.
Right.
As a leader, you really need to provide them with information. What's going on in the business? If you have to lay off people, what's that process like? Is that the end of the process? Because if you don't communicate, they're spending an awful lot of time worst-case scenarioing, if that's a word, scenarioing, creating worst-case scenarios, and a lot of energy doing that instead of focusing on performance. Which is probably the other thing that I would do is really focus your employees on the objectives, on performance, that if we work and we stay focused together, we'll make it, we'll do fine. Let them know, you know, do they have the same decision-making authority or has it been changed because of economic conditions? But be real clear with the employees so that they can focus on helping you be successful in your business instead of being stressed out and worrying if they're going to have a job.
Many of the leadership is stressed out and worried that they're going to have a job. So
they're hiding
in their offices and keeping the door closed and creating even more stress than necessary.
Right.
It's true. And I'll tell you, I've heard both scenarios where, you know, the leaders become so internally focused in their company that they're not paying attention to the customers, or they're very scared and they're out there dealing with customers and not communicating with employees. So either way, that's a losing scenario. The leader needs to do both.
Jane, you know, as you take a look at your past experience, and whether it be large companies or whether it be entrepreneurial businesses, what really sets apart the high performers? The people who actually have achieved the kind of success that you're talking about?
It's some of the things we've already talked about. Number one, high performers know the legacy they want to leave, and they're very focused on making that happen. And when I say want to leave, it could be a leader who in a job within a company leaves a legacy to get promoted to a higher level job. So it's not just necessarily leaving the company, but it's leaving a leadership position in a company. So it's they know the legacy they want to leave. Number two, once they understand their legacy, they've got laser focus on the actions that need to be taken to make that legacy happen. Number three, the thing I mentioned about high performer focuses on the now and later, what's happening now, the immediate road ahead, as well as anticipating the next curve. Therefore, they are strategic thinkers. I think in general, they are constantly developing themselves. Even if they've reached a senior leader level, they know that they have to be a continuous learner because things are constantly changing, whether it be technology or the economy right now. And I would guess the last is an attribute. I think that it's very in tune with what 75 years ago Earl Nightingale said about we are what we think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think leaders, successful high-performing leaders, have a very positive spin on everything. They've got a very positive outlook. They can turn crisis into opportunity. They can find their way on a dark road. They can drive off road very well. They've got that mindset about we can do this.
Well, I think that those are very, very powerful. Out of the 10 items that you have in your 10-point checklist, is there one that sticks out that, you know, if you didn't have the time to focus on any of the other 9, which one would you start with? Do they actually go in order, or is there an importance scale that you could attach to them?
Well, they were actually built from the inside out. I did assessment first because I think you need to get a read on the strengths and weaknesses of your company first before you'll know what needs to improve, what's working, what's not working. But the most important is the core, the mission, vision, and values. I'm a real believer that if you have a well-defined mission or purpose, you have a well-articulated vision of where you're taking the company, and you're real clear about values, about how you want employees to treat each other as well as your customers, everything else is secondary. And companies would not need pages and pages and pages of a personnel manual to tell people how to behave and what to do.
Right.
I think that piece guides everything else. It's the chassis of the car upon which everything else rests. It's the foundation that everything needs to be connected to. So once you've got that, you've got your key piece. And after that, it's every question is, okay, if that's true, then what does leadership need to be able to do to make that happen? If that's true, what kind of customers are your target market? If that's true, how do you create your strategic plan so that you work your mission, you achieve your vision, you act on your values, and so on around the 10 checkpoints? Everything connects to the all-important core.
Well, that is really great advice. Again, her book is Driven to Success, a 10-point checkup for achieving high performance in business. The author is Jane Goldner. And Jane, can you tell them how they can reach you?
They can reach me through my website at thegoldner, G-O-L-D-N-E-R, group.com. They can call my office at 404-459-2860. The book is available on Amazon and will soon be in bookstores.
Well, Jane, I am going to be in Atlanta next week, and I would just, if you're going to be in town, I would love to have coffee with you.
I would love that as well, and I have to say, pending jury duty.
I've seen that movie before. Well, listen, this
but please
has
call
been
me.
Terrific. I definitely will, and I actually run a group called the Executive Girlfriends Group, and we're having a special dinner on Tuesday night, and Libby Gill, who is also one of my board members for Solutions Live, is going to be our guest at that dinner. So I'm going to send you an invitation to that. So even if you are in jury duty, maybe you can join the girls for dinner on Tuesday night.
Would love to do that. That would be great.
Great. Well, listen, it has been terrific, and I will be in touch.
Sounds good.
Okay, great. And speaking of Atlanta, our next guest is also from Atlanta. And before I introduce him, again, I want to just recap that our sponsor for today's show is The Guru Nation. The Guru Nation offers its content 24/7, plus the opportunity to talk live with over 20 industry leaders every month. And they really provide an amazing network of people. I joined over the weekend, and as Jane mentioned, she just joined it, and I'm pretty sure, knowing Chris, that she's checking it out even as we speak. So please check it out, GuruNation.com, or I'm sorry, The Guru Nation, TheGuruNation.com. All right, well, let's move forward to our next guest. And I would like to introduce Edward Cates. Edward, are you on the air?
I am. How are you today?
Great. I am doing just great. I love it when that works seamlessly for me.
Absolutely.
Well, terrific. Well, Edward is the president and CEO of a company called Nuance Marketing. And as I mentioned, he is based in Atlanta, delivers strategic marketing, communications, advertising, event management, and public relations solutions for his clients. And I always love it when we have a guest who has been actually recommended personally to me by someone that I know and love and respect. And Lana Kim, who we had on the show last month, talking about her amazing story of coming over from Russia, had told me about Edward a couple of weeks ago. And I was just delighted, Edward, that we were able to work quickly and get you on the show, because she just speaks your praises. And we wanted to talk today about business growth, and I just took the liberty of taking the company name that you have and said, let's talk about the nuances of growth.
That's great. I like that a lot. It's always a good thing when you have a business name that can be used and applicable. So that was perfect.
Not only that, I was saying you can use that as a play on words and write all kinds of books around that. So
there you go.
So I've got your next career lined up for you.
Excellent. That's great.
Edward, I am joined today by my co-host, Chris Bradshaw, and she is one of those wonderfully intellectually curious people who, you know, loves to hear stories like yours. And so we are going to co-interview you today. And I just want to start by asking, you know, what has been your experience in contributing to the growth of businesses or organizations? And if you can, talk to us about whether you focus primarily on large companies, small companies, entrepreneurial ventures. What's your sweet spot?
It's a great question, and it's an honor to be here with you today. My experience with growth has really been, and I think I have to look at it from a holistic perspective on my career. And it really started, you know, contributing to growth. I think about my time as a corporate executive with Bank of America, where I worked for about 10 years in a variety of roles that really kind of vary between multicultural marketing and communications, just general marketing, communications, and PR. When you're working for a major entity and you're working to try and, even within that corporate environment, you have a goals-oriented environment where our objective is to, for example, in supplier diversity and supply chain, our objective was to increase the number of minority and women-owned businesses that were providing products and services to a national banking entity. So with that was a goal of mine. We had very clear goals and objectives, and I think that's kind of translated and in a lot of ways galvanized my approach towards bringing growth to organizations. And then, you know, leaving the corporate world, I went to work for a mid-sized company that was really at a period of exponential growth, going from around $40 million in annual revenue to $100 million in the course of 2 years, where I was a director of marketing. Again, there were some very clear goals and objectives, and theirs was to gain more commercial market share in the electronic security space. So one of the ways that they did that was through acquisition, and I participated on an acquisition team. And so there are some very clear goals and objectives. So as I look now as an entrepreneur with a variety of clients, with a variety of goals, the key component, the formula remains the same. You know, what's your objective? Are you trying to kick up dust? Are you trying to sell more product? Do you want to develop more site traffic? So with those goals in mind, we develop a plan, and we'll talk about that. My client base is very diverse as well. I have some clients that are very large, major corporations, and I have some that are individuals that have very, very simple goals, but still need to have a plan and a process through marketing and communications to get that done. The successful part where I think our firm has been have provided a degree of difference, or we say a nuance in the way that we provide that, is to really try and establish some achievable but measurable goals for success and progress. And if we're able to do that, that's great. And I think if we're not able to identify, you know, I'm not a big fan of lofty goals, of fluffy requirements, of aspirational statements, but rather things that we can, I'm all about earning that checklist, or a mission complete, of green lighting a tag, a component or a line item in our action plan. Those are the things that get me excited. And so I think kind of coming from that environment where you have this, you know, everything needs to have measurable performance and results. In today's performance world in business, I think that it's been very helpful to kind of have that upbringing.
Edward, good morning. This is Chris.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and you are simply kind of restating and re-emphasizing some of the things that were said by both of our previous authors and consultants this morning. It's what is your goal? Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about? What are you worrying about? So how, a couple of questions. One is, how do you convince someone that they have to think about the longer term? It's not just tomorrow, right? How
right.
do you get them to stop, take a breath?
mm-hmm.
Because isn't that one of the challenges, no matter what size company it is?
It really is. And I had a great piece of advice as I started my business, where from an executive at a corporation that had owned a business, and I said, you know, do you have any words of wisdom, you know, on how you deal with clients, you know, as I go down this road? And she said to me very simply, meet your clients where they are, not where you want them to be. And that was one of those aha moments for me, because I think whether it hadn't been in a corporate environment or working for the mid-sized company, you know, you get to a point where your vision of how things should happen really are the things that develop your plan and actions. Well, when you have a client interface, you know, when I meet a client that says, hey, I want to sell this product, and I want to have a website and that where I can sell this product. Well, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, you need a website, you need to have a social media plan, you need to have, you know, print collateral, you need to have a variety of components. And I could really go 100 miles down past where that client is really sitting. When that client really just wants a merchant site to sell a product, they want to
right.
sell their widget online. And so I think what you try to do is really make sure that you do a really valuable exercise and self-inventory and analysis of what you're really trying to accomplish and then what you're currently doing. And what results are you getting from that? And then I think once you do that analysis and you baseline the things that you're doing and the tools that you're currently employing, you can really get a crisper idea or perception of where you need to go, what you need to do, what are the steps. Okay, here's where you are currently, but we say we want to increase your site traffic by another 10,000 people per month. Well, if that's what you want to do, then here are the things that we need to do right now to put in place. You know, do you have a direct mail component in place from an email list, or are you using some of the tools that are available for you to reach mass audiences and provide you metrics? And if not, let's plan on doing those things. And at the same time, as a consultant for me, as I'm looking to provide this growth, you know, again, I'm 100 miles down where we like to be, but I need to be at mile marker 2 with the client right now. And then we need to move to mile marker 5 and then 25. And then that way we're going together instead of developing a situation where you can be frustrated and say, look, we understood where you started, and here's where we're going in this next step, and here's where we plan to be in our end result. But I think providing this, you know, taking that time to just kind of understand what it takes to get there is such an important part of building trust with the client. I think in really, again, developing a plan that you can achieve and be successful and really celebrate is really having that understanding. Because otherwise, my clients, you know, looking at me as, you know, minimizing into the sunset as I'm 100 miles down the road, and they're just looking to try and accomplish the things that they want, and we need to be in step for every part of that journey. And I want to be able to accelerate and say, okay, for this part of the journey, we're going to run a little bit. For this part, we'll jog, and sometimes we'll walk. But either way, we're moving forward. And even if it's small steps in the same direction, it can equal a great distance if you have a plan and a strategy.
That is such wonderful. I love that. Meet them where they are. And if it's part of educating them to explain what else they need, because if they don't know about it, they don't know they need it.
Right.
So you've taken on the education aspect of that. And if you don't do that, I guess, you know, and I've seen that. I've seen consultants who are very frustrated with the fact that they know what their client needs and their client doesn't get it, right? And you're saying just sit there with them, do what they need to do, because then they'll be happy with you, they'll trust you, and potentially be ready to move to the next step. Is that what you find?
That's exactly right. I think that there is a small balance there that I think to make sure I mention is that I don't want to try and represent an attitude of complacency with the client, but rather patience and maybe having your desires kind of be sublimated underneath the current client's needs. And I think that, you know, on one hand, yes, you have to be right there with the client and meet them where they are, but you do have to sometimes be a little bit of fire under their behind and say, hey, you know, here's where we can go if we do this. And then, you know, the good part about that approach is that there's nothing more satisfying than when your client gets to a point and they're like, well, you know, we did XYZ, you know, from our plan. We need to do this. Can we do this? Absolutely we can do this. I've been waiting on you. You know, that's a fantastic thing to be able to see your client evolve to a point where they say, okay, I had a client recently who I've been working with for some time on really developing consistent marketing. And we had done some brand revisions and, you know, done some logo refresh, and we had done some different components to try and just polish up the overall consistency of packaging for the company. And they had a really big meeting, and I was able to say, okay, look, for this meeting, I think you need to do something different. This isn't something we just copy and paste. We need to really develop a custom presentation that really speaks to the full breadth of what you do, because you're currently repositioning within an industry of manufacturing to try and expand your scope. So what we need to do is really make sure that as you look at your current expertise, which may be 75% of your current customer base, that as you look to expand into this new 25% area, that you put all of that into perspective in a way that when you have this meeting, they understand that you have a wide range of capabilities, that you have a full range of scope. And some of it is applying the skills that you did on that 75% of your previous work to the new 25%, and how that, you know, that's the sales pitch. Well, the end result was fantastic because we developed a custom presentation with the client. We were able to really go down a process of really deep diving into what they do, and which was great for me because it created more discovery about their products, their solutions, their brand messaging, the history of the company, the vision of where they'd like to go. Because, you know, and that was going from what had been a really kind of a, I won't say a generic presentation format, to a deeper dive. And then the client was able, you know, suddenly the great part is I was, you know, drinking out of a fire hydrant, you know, because then they wanted more presentations like that. Well, I've got another presentation with another client, and I want us to have something that had that same, you know, hit the nail on the head effect that we did with this one. So there's a fantastic process of working with your client to get them, you know, again, the results that they're looking for, because that's really what this is about. As a consultant, you know, I don't want to just have, you know, warm and fuzzy conference calls and get a check. I want us to really be able to create results, and ultimately them saying that hiring Nuance Marketing was the best thing we ever did, or Edward Cates and his team are an expert, you know, a team of experts. Well, when we're able to go from that process of delivering their needs and then expanding that process into a point where we say, okay, I didn't know I needed this, but now I realize I do, and I know how to do it, and I know how to do it well, then that's mission accomplished in a lot of ways.
Well, I want to take just a quick break here and, again, thank our sponsor for today, thegurunation.com, and that's the Guru Nation with the word the at the front. And they have just a terrific knowledge network, and it's free for individuals to participate, and they are working at putting together the strongest network of professionals who and for those who want to learn more, stand out, and lead effectively. It's a professional community designed to ignite thinking, provide invaluable skill building, and create access to several hundred seasoned industry experts who are willing to share not only their knowledge, but to open important doors. And we all know how important that is, particularly in this economy. Also, for those of you who are listening online, there is a chat button at the center of the blogtalkradio.com/solutionslive page. You can ask questions of Edward online. And I do have a couple of people who have called in. I'm just going to pop in and see if they have questions or whether they're just lurking.
Well, some of us just like to listen, not lurk necessarily.
Listen and lurk. That's okay. Lurking is a good thing. Actually, I've got two people from area code 330. This is a 330, and the first three numbers are 723. Did you have a question, or are you just listening? Sounds like we have got someone just listening. And we've got another one. Let me just get them on the air. The other area code 330. Do we have a question? Or have we got, again, someone just listening? Okay, great. Okay, terrific. Well, you've got a lot of fans in area code 330, Edward.
That's good. That's, I'm blowing up. I'm getting big. That's great. I'm building the
buzz. it's so funny because, I mean, you guys both remember the days when we could see an area code and we knew exactly where it was. And it frustrates me to no end to see these area codes that I have no idea now where they are.
I think that is somewhere in Ohio. I think that's like Metro Cleveland area. Don't ask me how I know that.
Well, great. Well, again, you must have a host of fans in that area because we've got a number of folks listening from there. Well, as we're taking a look, you've talked a lot about some very, very specific tactical things. Where do you actually start when you come? And let's use as an example someone like me, for instance. I always like being able to get some personal advice here. I've been an entrepreneur for a very long time, have taken a number of different ideas and tried to bring them to fruition. So if you've got someone like me who right now has, you know, three or four different ventures, where do you start in getting them focused, getting them to decide where it is to invest the bulk of their time and their efforts?
Great question. And I'll say, you know, from what I've seen, Chicky, you're in pretty good shape, at least from what I've seen from Solutions Live. You're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're on LinkedIn. I think that's a fantastic way to use the social media network to really kind of expand your overall reach, and that's a fantastic way. But where I generally start is, you know, and I'd say maybe, you know, about five or six steps. It's pretty general, and I'll just kind of simmer it down to the essentials. But I generally like to again find out what are the current marketing efforts that you're doing, because usually someone has something. You know, it may be, you know, I send an email to five of my clients. It may be we have a direct email campaign and we're giving away T-shirts and we've got, you know, at Atlanta Braves night, and it may be a variety of components, but find out what all those efforts are. It may be the logo, the brochure. What's the brand consistency, you know, direct mail and email participation? So once you get that current baseline, that's a great place to start, because you've got to understand even the components that you may not consider marketing. It may be your regular participation at a board meeting or a meeting of the Chamber of Commerce. During those times, you are absolutely marketing your company and positioning yourself for growth. The second part, I think the second step is really going back to what I think a lot of the folks on the show today have talked about is goal setting or understanding what you're trying to accomplish. You know, again, for some folks, it's kicking up dust and awareness. I want you to just really know about my brand, my product, my company, my initiative. I want to provide you information on how you can reach me, on the work that we're doing. You know, that's a fantastic objective. For some folks, it's much more tangible and actionable, where they want to convert a contact, a visit to a website, into a direct sale. They want you to click on the shopping cart and check out and create that transaction. Or it may be to show up and attend an event. So whatever your goals are, I think defining them real clearly, that's what's going to be important to you being able to look back and measure success. You know, this is what you're trying to do. And then I think also it's important to dive into what you're saying about your company, your initiative, your project. I had a great professor in college. I was a communication major that, you know, communication can be such a vague term. And he was, Dr. Stephen Catt was a fantastic professor. He said, communication can be simply defined as the sharing of meaning. Sharing of meaning, three words. If I didn't get anything else out of those 4 years of college, I got sharing of meaning and communication for sure, locked down. So with a company, how that translates into success or position yourself for growth is how are you talking about your company? What's your elevator speech? You know, how do you speak about your capabilities? But most importantly, or as important, is how does your team speak about your core competencies? And are you all saying the same thing? Are you on the same page? And if not, then we need to develop a plan to get the messaging to a point where it's consistency. So the branding on the website, on the blogs, on, you know, the content you provide on Twitter, all of these things are aligned so that you're saying similar things. But, you know, it's great to have a voice, more important to know what you're saying with a voice, but also important to identify your audience, which was what I would say would be a next step. You know, is it your clients? Is it your colleagues? Are there partners or potential partners that can help grow your business? Or is it mentors? Is it mentees? Is it all of the above or some of them? Or at times two or three? If understanding the audience that's being reached through the different channels is a critical component, because it's really going to drive how you position your business, your product, your service as a solution, as really something that can be a viable product that's actionable. People want to go out and say, if you're a consultant, this person is a subject matter expert that delivers quality. If it's a A-plus Acme widget, then this is the best widget you can buy. But understanding who you're speaking to reach that. And then I think one of the most important steps is developing, or one of my favorite steps, developing an actionable and achievable plan for knocking out those goals that we talked about in that second step. You know, and in these action plans, I think you need to really define, you know, I'm not talking about something that's really kind of, you know, again, high level and theme oriented and has a lot of flourish based language. Rather, things that are very specific, like a plan that says, you know, here's the goal, this is who our audience is, and this is, you know, who we want to talk to, this is what we want to say to them or the message, and this is what we want them to do, whether that's to buy or be informed, and then who's responsible for that task on that strategic marketing or communication plan. Because then you start to bring across through your activities a number of key activities. You know the who, the what, the why, you know what you want them to do. And by having all of these components together, you've really kind of gone through a process to say, okay, I've got a plan that's in place to execute. And that's another important point. And I think as a bonus that I would say, I think it'd be, you can't be on a web radio show, which I think demonstrates this, is that you have to use the latest mediums of technology to connect it all, to control site traffic and measure the effectiveness of your efforts. Because I think that technology is a fantastic equalizer. It's connecting people Definitely. Around the globe. It is something that allows for, with very minimal cost and overhead, allows for you to reach great amount of people, but also you can portray, I know that sounds inaccurate, but you can convey an image of being larger than you really are. And I say that because
absolutely, Edward.
And that's exactly what I think, you know, that's part of marketing and advertising. I think that's part of growth. I think part of growth is sometimes, you know, if your marketing and advertising should be bigger than what you are. You know, that mid-sized company I talked about when we first started, right. Their marketing didn't at all portray the size that they really were. So my plan was to let's make them look like they're a $100, $200 million company. And then over time, as they grew, and granted they had some acquisitions that helped a great deal, the marketing was very much in line with their current scope. So technology does that, whether it's your Twitter feed.
Absolutely. And, you know, Edward, it's funny that you should mention that, because I had been invited a couple of weeks ago for a planning meeting about starting a local radio show here in the Tampa metropolitan area and also over into the Orlando and Sarasota markets. And, you know, we're going through and we're talking about this, and I'm getting excited about it because I thought, you know, I've now got, 75, 80 radio shows under my belt in the last 2 months just because of the way that I attacked this, you know, with both arms open and just kind of running at it. And so then the woman is talking about raising $250,000 to launch this, you know, one-hour show. And I'm thinking, honey, if I had $250,000 to put it Marketing Solutions Live, you know, I'd be reaching the ends of the earth,
right?
Not just the local radio markets of Orlando, Tampa, and in Sarasota. And, you know, and I actually said to her, you know, explain to me why I'd want to put my time into a one-hour show when I'm currently doing, you know, four individual shows, you know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, so eight shows a week, and then I do typically 4 to 8 special branded shows a month, you know, for different clients. Mm-hmm. And but you're right, it's technology that's that equalizer, and I think if people can realize that, you know, even creating a website these days, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day who wanted to build a business, and they're like, oh, I got to find a web developer. And I said, you know what, until you get one, just go onto Blogspot, because you can create a bunch of nested little Blogspot sites and link them to each other. And I am like the master of you know, building a business with no capital. In fact, I'm just releasing a book about that, you know. So, you know, you're absolutely right, and I don't think that was off target at all to talk about giving an image bigger than you are.
Because I think in time you become that. I think that's mm-hmm. I think it really kind of helps with visualization. I do believe that if you can develop your marketing image on where you'd like to go, you'd be surprised in time you actually get there.
Yeah. And then it's time for the next one.
That's exactly right. You're moving the bar.
Exactly. Definitely. And that's, you know, that's funny. I mean, that is what we do in other aspects of our life. We just don't think of it that way.
That's right.
And, Edward, you know, since you've been an entrepreneur, you have published as a freelance writer. You haven't written a formal book, and I'm going to say yet because I think there's one inside of you. But covering, you know, business and supplier diversity and even President Obama's use of the Internet and technology during his campaign. So how does writing as an activity and publishing your writing stimulate growth for your agency?
That's a great question. For me, having a business provided me an opportunity to do some things that I couldn't when I was in a corporate environment. It really allowed for me to apply my talents and experience to create a prospering business. But also, you know, I've explained to people, when you're a writer in business communication, and let me back up. Yes, you're right. There is a book in me, and I think there's a couple in there, so thank you for the encouragement. I really appreciate it. But part of writing freelance was exactly getting ready for that process. You know, I'm a big fan of the Idiot's Guides, you know, because I feel like, you know, hey, this book's got my name, at least in the title, Idiot's Guide to Getting Published. And fantastic resource for me to go to that book and say, hey, well, what don't I know and what do I need to know? And one of those things that I learned was about building authority or building expertise, building a venue or a pull or an audience, and also developing a little bit more of a portfolio to kind of allow for you to support the things that you like to do to get published. Now, in this world of self-publishing, a lot of those may have to do with traditional route as far as being published. But for me, it was about a personal journey. I think that when you talk about growth, you know, there's not been an experience in my career or life where I have grown that there's not been a challenge, and it's sometimes pain, or sometimes there's even been some failures. But as a result of those experiences, I've always grown to be a stronger person or smarter business person or learned a solution that I didn't employ the first time that I should have. And so that's the same way for me with writing. It gives me a channel and a conduit that while I'm working with clients, working on fantastic and exciting projects, it allows for me to continue to exercise that writing muscle, to continue to grow and develop. But I also get to speak to some amazing people profiling their businesses or discuss and review topics you know, at a high intellectual detail where I can really dig into it and really give a bit of my perspective. As you write in business as a communications or marketing or PR person, I've likened it to being an artist that loves to paint, you know, portraits and paint creatively. But your real job is painting houses. You know, it's painting. It's not the same. You know, you don't get as much of an opportunity to put your own personality into that process. Well, same for business writing. You're writing, and yes, you're constructing a variety of messaging that's important for a business objective, but it's not the personal piece. The freelance piece for me allows for me to do that. It allows for me to examine successful businesses, to ask them questions. For me, at times, it's gained personal insight on their story to have successful business models so that for me, I can grow as a process, and subsequently the readers will find insight from that as well. So I think for me, writing has been a process of the growth of nuanced marketing. I think it's been an opportunity for me to gain insight from folks that are really smart, that I'd love to find and follow their model. It's also been something that's allowed for me to expand into where I'd like to go, and that would be to be a published author with some book projects.
Well, cool. Well, you and I are going to talk about that next week in Atlanta. If you
That's
are
great.
Still going to be around, I am going to be in town, so I am going to send you a note about that.
Great.
And we're going to see if we can't spark that.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with you. Svetlana Kim is a fantastic lady, and I'm glad that she got us connected so that we could have a chance to talk on the show. And
Absolutely.
Nice to meet you as well, Chris.
Thank you, and thanks for sharing meaning, the sharing of meaning.
No,
and
no problem.
As you're leaving us, can you tell people how to reach you?
Absolutely. You can reach me via the website for Nuance Marketing, which is www.nuancemktg.com. So that's www.nuancemktg.com, or at www.edwardcates.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at www.twitter.com/EdwardCates.
Cool. All right. Well, I will be in touch, and you just have a super day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Terrific. All right. Well, that was great. And, Chris, you know, it's never what's the word I'm looking for? All of these shows always hang together so beautifully.
I know.
Isn't it amazing?
Well, let me leave you now. I believe it's time for...
It is for Pamela Skilling's...
Exactly. So I will be listening in. Have a great half hour.
Okay, we will do that. And before I get started on our last half hour of the show, which is a show titled Corporate Escape Artists, I do want to thank our brand new sponsor of the Solutions Live program, Guru Nation. And the Guru Nation, which can be found on the web at www.thegurunation.com, offers content 24/7 plus the opportunity to talk live with over 20 industry leaders every month. For those of you who would like to look at joining Guru Nation as a guru, as an expert who has something to contribute to others, or if you are just someone who wants to use the Guru Nation to help build your professional skills or build your business or just ignite your thinking, individual membership in the Guru Nation is free. Okay, Pamela, do I have you on the phone?
Yes, you do, and I'm intrigued by this idea of the Guru Nation.
I'd love to be a
citizen of that country.
Absolutely. Well, you know the cool thing, and I mean you've watched this happen just in the few weeks, and it seems impossible that that's all that we've known each other. But every single thing that comes across my path these days is a building block on something bigger that we're all going to be working on together. So I do hope that you get a chance to go on Guru Nation and check it out. I actually got connected with it through Amy Dorn Copeland, who is one of the co-creators of it, and she is the co-author of the book I Didn't See It Coming, which was written with Nancy Widman, the former CEO of CBS Radio. And Amy used to be the producer of Good Morning America, which is, of course, one of my favorite shows and one of the only ones that, as a mother of an 8 and 10-year-old, I actually get to watch. anyway, I am not going to take up any more time because I want you to introduce our guest. While you introduce her, I will get her on the air.
Excellent. Yes, we are very lucky to have Shannon McCaffrey with us today because she is not only an entrepreneur and a very successful corporate escape artist with an amazing story about her escape, but she is also a marketing expert, former marketing director for Fortune 500 companies, who now specializes in helping entrepreneurs and small businesses learn how to market more effectively. And I first met Shannon when I interviewed her for Escape from Corporate America. I was totally wowed by her story, and I think you'll all really enjoy hearing what she has to say about her own experience and also those marketing secrets that we're going to get her to spill for us, too. So are you on the line, Shannon?
She is.
Can you hear me?
We can. You're going to need to talk up just a little bit.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
We can.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Welcome.
And Shannon,
thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I also wanted to mention that you are a contributor to a book that sounds just fascinating called Women on Fire, 20 Inspiring Women Share Their Life Secrets and Save Years of Struggles, which I just think is a really, really intriguing title.
It is. When does that come out, Shannon?
It's actually going to be out next month. We're very excited about it. So,
and
actually my story, my full story is actually in that chapter, but I will give you a brief interesting part of it today. If you like,
yeah,
let me know.
Let's start there because I know one of the things people might relate to is Shannon was laid off 4 times over 9 years before she decided to escape. Why don't you tell us sort of the condensed version of that story?
Sure. I'll try to give you a brief version. Yeah, it was an exciting journey and one of those kind of things that I've realized, oh, my God, you know, how many times does it take for someone to be laid off before you realize that maybe this isn't, you know, where your future lies? Anyway, I was with the company for a good bit of time, and basically we merged. It was in the publishing industry, and the publishing industry over the years, of course, has merged, and we just kept – they kept buying companies, and my position kept going away, and I think and all 3 times they hired me back, so it was fascinating. So it was a great company. They kept letting me go and then hiring me back. But the thing that's the hardest is when it happens the first time, because the first time is for me was I was so tied into my job. You know, my job was me, you know, was myself, and I so identified with it that when I had no job, I was like, well, oh, my God, you know, who am I, you know? So that was a really difficult struggle, and it came, you know, the whole thing was wrapped around trying to figure out, you know, who am I and what am I supposed to be doing next, and I came up with a couple of survival tips for myself going through this process. You know, and one of them is to get support, and that was amazing for me to be able to sort of ask for support and get it and surround yourself with very supportive people. And through that process and through a coach and, you know, therapy and all that fun stuff, I was able to pick myself up and I went for that next job. And, you know, I think the last time I was laid off, I realized, you know, then that, you know, the 9-to-5 thing was not working for me. And the job actually, you know, made me sick sort of psychologically. I ended up having to go to the hospital. So at that point, I'm thinking, you know, maybe this whole the stress and everything that's related to corporate America, because I had a job since I got out of college. So, you know, I didn't know any other way of working except going to an office every day. And it just happened that an old mentor coach of mine called me right after that and said, hey, you know, I have an idea. Why don't you start your business? You know, I'll help you. And so I was like, hey, you know, how can you refuse that? And so that's sort of the brief version of my story.
That's great.
Well, Shannon, you know, in light of all of that and what you went through in corporate America and the in and out and the back and forth you know, the turmoil that wreaks within you, how have you been able to translate that experience in helping others grow their businesses?
Well, one of the key things I think that's really helped people is, you know, it's all about being true to yourself and being really who you are. And once you can figure out, you know, what you're passionate about, and I call what your superpowers are, you know, and how you can help other people, then you can really focus in on, you know, what you do the best. And, you know, whatever you've developed your business or created your business, the key is really being able to connect with your prospects and with your clients, because you know, I don't know if you guys follow Seth Godin, but, you know, his whole permission marketing, which came out years ago, you know, what I teach my business owners and clients is that it's all about, you know, you're not selling a widget, you're not selling a service, you know, you're selling, you know, solutions to people's problems, you know, I mean, and that's been something that has really helped most of them and all of my businesses is just really focusing in on that aspect. And I apologize, my dog is barking in the background. Why don't you ask me another question?
He wants to join the interview. Absolutely. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about Shannon's title. She's known to her clients and others as the marketing implementer, which I think is great, and I think we could all use one of those. I know I could. So maybe you can share with us a little bit about what that means.
Sure. And sorry about that. I guess real life always has to happen, right? It's one of the things
you try to.
I put the dog in a certain place. Anyway, I also, my other passion is rescuing animals. So I'm a dog lover, so I guess hopefully that'll come through. All right, so your question was about marketing implementation?
Yeah, what is the marketing implementer title all about, and what does that mean for your clients?
What I have found in working with clients and with prospects is one of the biggest stumbling blocks for entrepreneurs is, you know, they have all these amazing ideas, you know, and they go to these conferences and they leave with thousands of ideas. When they get home, you know, they get stuck in their business and all these ideas are thrown on a shelf or thrown by the wayside and they never have time to put them together. And so what I do is I work with entrepreneurs and business owners and help them take those ideas that we think are going to be really prosperous for them and really turn them into money, whether it's, you know, creating a product or writing a book or, you know, doing an online course, you know, whatever it is, we figure out, because they're usually stuck in that idea, whereas I have no, you know, connection to it. And I can, you know, my whole thing is I know how to take something and I know how to run with it and make it happen. And it really helps them because it gives them a jump start. And, you know, when you're staring at a blank page, having someone come in, you know, and fill in that page for you, and all you have to do then is just edit it, is a true gift for some of these people.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Well, I speaking as a an entrepreneur who has an idea a minute, having something to help me get focused and implement is actually precisely what is needed.
Right.
So that is really, really terrific. You know, and again, I took a look through your site, and for those who are just tuning in, Shannon's site is marketingimplementer.com, and she also has a blog, marketingimplementer.wordpress.com. And Pamela, did you have another question for Shannon?
Oh yeah, I've got a million. I just didn't want to take up all of her time.
No.
I'm thinking. So tell us a little bit about how you built your business. We all know, coming from the corporate world, we have a lot of great skills and connections, but starting from scratch to build a business can be a challenge. How did you go about that?
One of the great things about starting your own business is usually by that time you have a lot of, you know, relationships with people and a lot of connections. And the one thing that I would give the analogy of trying to attach yourself to an elephant. It's kind of like, you know, when a bird attaches itself to an elephant. You know, find someone who you really admire and someone who is really successful. And, you know, set up some time and chat with them and pick their brain, because the one thing that helped me build my business was picking the brains of other people who I admired or people whose businesses that I wanted to maybe model. And the second thing I would tell people is, this is one of my favorite little stories, is if you hang around with 9 broke people, guess who's going to wind up being the 10th broke person? So my whole philosophy is really surround yourself with people who are very successful and people who are supportive of you, you know, because those are the two things that helped me. Is I created a success team, which I call, you know, people that are really successful who I know will help me be successful and hold my feet to the fire. And then I have like a sort of support team, you know, for the emotional side when you're feeling really crappy or yucky and, you know, you really need just some support. But those, you know, those three things really came in handy, you know, in creating a business. And the other thing is I just saw Bob Parsons speak. I don't know if you guys know Bob Parsons, he's the CEO of GoDaddy. I mean, the one thing is, you know, GoDaddy almost went belly up, and he has a great story. He talks about that. And he says, you know, he was ready to quit, throw in the towel. And as soon as he said he was ready to quit, the business then turned around. So his favorite little quote is, when you're getting ready to quit, you're much closer to success than you think you are, so don't quit.
Oh, I love that. He sounds like he'd be a great guest on our show.
You know, he would. He was an inspiring guy, and he's like a good old boy. You know, he's a Vietnam vet, and he was very funny and very entertaining. And actually, you know, not that I need to promote him or anything, but if you can go to his website, I think it's just bobparsons.me. He has Bob's 16 Rules of Success. So it's his own little blog. So if anybody out there is interested, you should check it out, because it's really, he's got some really cool things.
Well, definitely. And, you know, and I really love that that advice, because it is so important. And, you know, I know I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and a woman stood up and said, you know, well, you know, do you want to be in my mastermind group? And I like the term success team, because, you know, while it really is the same concept as the mastermind group, there are so many different ideologies out there that kind of sit around these groups. And, you know, I have a pretty simple life ideology, and you know, like to just find people who believe that success is not only desirable, but it's possible, and that really have that mindset, you know, without a lot of baggage that comes along with that. So I'm
going to
look at who. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I've got kind of the second group that you were talking about, which is that emotional support group. I've actually got two. I've got one here locally that I meet with every Monday morning here in Tampa. And then I've got a group called the Executive Girlfriends Group that I've put together.
Cool.
And we have a phone call every Friday afternoon. So I've got my week kind of sandwiched in between those two sets of, you know, just complete support on both the business and the personal side. But what I haven't done is get that success team together. So that is really, really great advice, and I am actually going to take you up on that one.
Well, thank you. And listen, you know, and just what you said, I'm actually involved in a couple of masterminds too, and I include the people, you know, that are in there, part of my success team. And I think, you know, you brought up a really good point, especially for those of us who end up working out of our homes or maybe working out of a small office. I mean, that's one of the toughest things, is because we're so isolated, and you know, isolation is a dream killer, right? So it's really important to, you know, whether it helps you to go to networking meetings, maybe they're once a month, or, you know, go to your chamber of commerce meetings, or, you know, or find like-minded groups of people. And as you guys know, I mean, there's so many online between, you know, Facebook and Twitter and, you know, and MySpace and all that stuff. I mean, there's definitely a place for all of us. It's just a matter of just finding that place and then, you know, being able to accept the support and being able to help other people too. Because that, right, isn't that, because it's not just, you know, it's not just someone helping me, but I get so much out of helping other people too and supporting them and encouraging their dreams.
What's the biggest problem that your clients have that they come to you to solve? And has that changed with the current economic environment?
You know, the interesting thing is my clients are not so much affected with the economy, and they are in some ways, but the beauty is, you know, most of my clients go after people who are affluent, which means, you know, that's the last, you know, stage of, you know, people that'll be affected with what's going on in the economy. But, I mean, you raise a good question. I think people came to me in the beginning more for, I think, just processes, you know, processing or actual tasks, like, you know, I need you to write a sales letter for me, or I'm writing a newsletter and I need you to put it together and do copy. And my business has evolved more in the problem that people have, or they want to create an informational product, right? They have an idea. Let's say, you know, they want to, you know, create a whole product around reading, you know, to kids or whatever their passion is, and they need someone like me to say, okay, is this something that is going to work? You know, can we make money off of it? And then how do we put it together? And then, you know, how do you go from putting it online, you know, the squeeze page to, you know, your landing page to that whole process, and then production and all that. I mean, so it becomes a much bigger, you know, issue. So, but most people are now looking for other ways of driving revenue and income, and informational marketing is out there, and I'm good at putting together processes and figuring out, you know, is this going to be profitable, and how can we do it, and how do we get it done for you? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but I still say, but I also just want to say, I still think, and most people do come for the implementation, most people are still do come to me for the problem of, I have this great idea, and I don't know how to get it done. Can you help me? So that's a big one.
Well, are you seeing in the economy and today's sort of marketplace between the economy and, you know, all the technology, the new technology that's coming up, are there particular strategies or models that you're seeing being more effective these days than in the past?
Yes. Yes, I'm so glad you asked me that question. And the one thing, and I don't want to scare people, because I know when you say words like Twitter or Facebook, that, you know, half the people are like, what are you talking about? I don't really understand it. But I was like that. I guess I got on Twitter about 4 months ago, and I looked at it, and I'm like, what is this? This makes no sense to me. I don't understand it. It's just like, you know, one big conversation. I don't like chat rooms. You know, I don't do AOL, whatever. But since I've been on it, I found that it's a very valuable tool. And I actually read an article about the guy who created it, and now his name is escaping me. It's Jeff, somebody who's in the New York Times. And he created it just as a way for a company to just chat with each other, like an IM, but it wasn't. It was like a big, long stream. And I found success in Twitter just by going on and creating, you know, a little persona of myself and really being interesting and fun and giving back to people. And for instance, you know, I always look for resources, and, you know, I always now write to my Twitter, you know, followers and say, hey, I'm looking for a really good web designer, or I'm looking for a good copywriter, you know, can anyone send me? And I have found some really good people. You know, and I know there's a lot of ways out there to get resources, but I've also had a lot of really good connections. So if you're looking for work or, you know, looking for another way to communicate, I would definitely use Twitter and also use Facebook, as well as, you know, you've got a great sponsor, which I heard, which is another wonderful way. I mean, there's a couple of good websites out there to put your shingle out to, or to get some clients, because that's the key thing. It's difficult for people right now is getting new clients, right, in this
right.
type of climate. But the best strategy that most of my prospects and clients use to get new clients is to really be very strategic in the money that you're spending and you're going after. And that's one thing I do see people are pulling back. But I would consider yourself a marketer and really use strategies like direct response marketing, which means don't ever send anything out unless you're requesting for something back, meaning don't ever send out, like if I send out a newsletter, or if I send out an email or put an ad somewhere, I'm always going to say, hey, you know, sign up, give me a way to opt in or a way to raise my hand, because it's all about building a list. Because that's the thing that people don't understand, that I think anyway, is when you have a company, you know, it's not just about selling widgets to make money. It's really about selling widgets to make money to gain a new customer, to then market that customer to life, you know, for life. And it's all about cultivating your customers and who you have and treating them really well and really taking good care of them. And this, in this economy, this is what's missing. I mean, you guys know, you know, just from, you know, your own customer service interactions that you've had, it's like that's the one thing that seems to go away. And the person, the company, like Zappos, I heard Tony Hsieh speak, Zappos, customer service is their number one, you know, their key. And that's his whole motto is they deliver happiness to people, you know, through their shoes and all their clothing and whatever they're selling. So that's one thing I would say to anyone out there is definitely, you know, really focus in on customer service and how. What can you do for your customers? How can you go above and beyond? Because that's really, you know, keeping that customer with you and really, you know, having them a devoted customer for life is work, but it's also going to help you then create a very successful business.
I think that's great advice. Actually, just asking you as an expert, one of the things that is a pet peeve of mine on Twitter and Facebook, which
okay.
I think are both very valuable,
yeah.
And I love them, but there are people on there who it's always all about the hard sell and the self-promotion. So do you advise your clients to how to kind of balance that?
Yeah.
Obviously, you're trying to be marketing all the time, but you also
right.
don't want to be obnoxious.
No, I'm totally with you 100%. And I think it was something I alluded to in the beginning before the dog started barking. It's about relationship development. It's about creating a relationship with your followers and with your clients and with your prospects. The analogy I've gotten before, you know, from other guys out there, or, you know, when you have a first date, you don't ask him to marry you, right? So
right.
It's the same thing on Twitter and Facebook. You know, when someone wants to be your friend, you don't write them back and say, hey, you know, sign up for my, you know, widget or my newsletter or whatever. I mean, that's just not the way to do it. It's because it's not about what they can do for you. It's all about what you can do for the other people. So I would suggest when you're getting on these social, you know, media sites is focus on how you can help other people and create and start conversations. If you want to, you know, and when you, here's a good tip for when you're developing, like let's say you have a little Twitter profile, you know, don't send people to your website. If you have a blog, send them there. Send them to where they can learn about you and where they can, you know, get a good feel for who you are and create your little bio, you know, as something fun and interesting so people can say, you know, I think I put up there dog lover or, you know, photographer and something else, you know, something where people can get a little bit of sense of, you know, my hobbies and who I am. Because, you know, let's face it, Pam, don't you want to relate to people who are like you? I mean, if I had a perfect world, I'd love to just work with all my friends, right?
You know, so, right, I love that, yeah.
Right? So it would be great, Pamela, if we could work with all our friends. So instead of that, you know, so why don't you treat the people that are in your life, you know, and the people that are on these social media sites, you know, like friends, and because you're going to want to connect with people that are like-minded. And so the more you show about your personality, so I always encourage my people to show their personality in their marketing, obviously whatever you're comfortable with and sharing with people. But, you know, the more you get to know someone, you know, the easier it'll be and the more they'll want to connect with you, right?
Yeah, I think that's very good advice.
Absolutely. So, you know, as you take a look at companies that are new or someone has a new idea, or perhaps an old idea that they tried a few years ago and it didn't work and they want to dust it off and try it again, what types of marketing do you have people focus on if the business is new?
This is a tactic, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but you can definitely search this online. But what's been working for people is using Google's pay-per-click and just putting up an ad, and the ad, you know, you got to get the right keywords, but if you put up an ad and see how many clicks people you get clicking on it. And actually, I don't know if you know Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, but that's how he got the title for his book. That wasn't the title for his book. The title for his book was some weird, you know, title, something I don't remember. And I know he tested them on pay-per-click, you know, where it just comes up, and the number of clicks he got for that title, he decided to use it, and then look, now it's really successful.
Wow.
So, I mean, a really easy way is to do that. Another way would be if you already have some current clients, I recommend doing a quick little survey. I use SurveyMonkey a lot, and it's a really good way. You ask 6 questions, you know, and you can really find out, because that's the one thing people forget is if you already have current clients, that's an amazing source of information for you. You know, you should send them a quick little survey and say, hey, you know, what's your biggest problem? What's your biggest challenge right now? You know, what's going on and what is it that you need help with? You know, and just ask them some couple of questions and see what they say. And I tell you what, you know, but based on their responses, you can probably develop some really good little products or services just around that.
Absolutely. I love SurveyMonkey, and
right.
I find that people are very willing to give their opinion if you make it easy for them.
Well, yeah, someone like you, definitely. Pamela, I mean, you could just offer them, you know, and another thing, too, I encourage people is to offer them something like doing the survey, whether it's a quick little, you know, ebook or a little, you know, audio or something as a thank you, and then it also, right. You know, something that you're giving something in return, and you're giving them something of value because they're giving you something of value. That's the other thing. It's like a good, you know, it's a feel-good thing. You know, we're all giving each other value. So
definitely.
I found
definitely.
So many corporate escape artists for the book through SurveyMonkey and just the word of mouth, sending people I knew who then pass it on to people they knew, and it just kind of spreads. It's a great way to get to test ideas and also just to figure out take the pulse of what's going on out there. What are people thinking?
Definitely.
Yeah, and you can also do it on Facebook or on Twitter, too, and just, you know, just put it out there. You know, what are people's biggest frustrations with blah and see what you come up with.
Yeah.
Those are just simple things that you can do that don't cost you any money. That's what I was thinking of, you know, economics.
Right. Well, Shannon, this has been really, really useful, specifically for me, and I'm hoping also for our listeners. How can folks reach you, Shannon?
The best way you can reach me, actually, if you don't mind, I would love, if anybody's interested in getting a copy of my newsletter, I do a monthly newsletter, you know, for it's because it's complimentary, you can go to my website, and it's just Marketing Implementer, and it's spelled both ways. I got all the ways, so it's I-M-P-L-E-M-E-N-T-E-R or T-O-R.com. And on the right-hand side, there's a little button that says free newsletter, and if you'd like to sign up, and it's a printed newsletter, because I'm an old-fashioned kind of girl. I love email, I love electronics, but I really like the printed, you know, a lot of people aren't using mail anymore, so hint, hint, if you, you know, don't stop direct mail, because all I'm getting are bills, getting something in the mail that's kind of fun and entertaining, like a newsletter, so if anyone, you know, wants it, and my email address is just info@marketingimplementer.com, so it's info@marketingimplementer.com. I welcome any communication and see how I can help anyone.
Okay, terrific. Well, Shannon and Pamela, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you.
You too.
For more information about Solutions Live, see www.solutionslive.blogspot.com. That's Solutions with a Z. I trust that today's show provided you with a bit of innovation and some inspiration. Join us again on Thursday from 10 until noon for the personal side of professional life. Go out and begin to leave your legacy today.